Running a call center sales team is definitely filled with challenges, but at the same time, can be very rewarding. There is no manual for how to win the call center sales game, which is why this podcast exists. As your guide, our goal is to help you overcome challenges, discover new tools, innovate where possible, and hear stories from others who have made it to the top of the call center mountain. Welcome to the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast with your host, Jason Cutter.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast. Today, I have a very special guest. We're going to talk about regulations. We're going to talk about compliance. We're going to talk about scary stuff that call center listeners may or may not want to hear. I've got Michelle Schuster on the show. She's from Mac, Murray & Schuster. She's a partner there. And her biggest focus is on the legal compliance side for call centers. She is the former chief of Ohio Attorney General's Consumer Protection Section. She's been in the space for two decades. Consumer protection, highly regulated business sectors, a wide range of privacy, advertising, consumer protection within that. And more recently, or right now, a lot of focus on telesales and teleservices. Michelle, welcome to the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast.
Jason, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So I'm glad you're here. This is a topic that a lot of people don't want to hear. There's two sides of the fence, which we'll talk about, the people who are proactive and reactive. I know one of the things that's super fun about this is that we actually met at Leeds Council, Leeds Con's 4-city industry tour. And there's two cities that you were there. And so I got to hear you talk. And we spent some time walking around the Memphis Zoo, which is super fun. But as soon as I heard you talking about what you did, it was like, I need to have you on the show. I want you to share what you can to help call centers, hopefully on the more proactive side.
Yeah, I mean, so critically important. Our tagline and what we always say to clients is you've got to have a defendable position before you start doing anything in the teleservices space, because there are so many traps and potential pitfalls for those that don't, for the ones that aren't aware of the regulations and aren't aware of how they need to document that they're complying with those. So it's just so, so critically important, especially, you know, nowadays you've got cheetahs. I'll use cheetahs since we met at the zoo, but you know, there are other wild animals coming at you from all direction in the form of vexatious litigators, which are those folks that have been called. They're not litigants yet because they haven't filed litigation, but folks that have been called, and they'll make demands for a financial settlement once they received a call. And then you have the lawsuits. TCPA lawsuits are still being filed at a very high number. And then on top of that, you've got the federal regulators, the FTC or the Federal Trade Commission, the Federal Communications Commission. And now we've got state AGs that have become very active in this space. And actually, breaking news right now, Jason, it just happened this day in the AG space, the National Association of Attorneys General, whose acronym is NAG, the world's greatest acronym for an association, they have just announced that they're having a robocall virtual summit open to the public. I think it's a $50 registration fee if you want to go. And the dates, and I have to look at this because I literally just got this email from the Ohio AG's office. And it's September 8th. 8th is the public part of that meeting. All 50 of the state's attorneys general offices, their consumer protection chiefs get together for these meetings. And this one in particular, which is on a robocall virtual summit. And just as a, you know, a reason why this is such an important topic, the AG's offices are really focused on this. And I'm sure we're going to talk about Facebook and other types of decisions like that on the federal level. But on the state level, you know, the AGs have issued at record high level subpoenas and investigative demands to companies in the lead generation space or affiliate marketing space, the calling space, marketing space. And they have spent a lot of time really looking at how, you know, the bad robocallers, the illegal robocallers are doing it. And at this summit, I think based on what I'm seeing in the agenda, they're going to lay out how it happens. And they're going to educate the other AG's offices on how to initiate their own investigations. So that's throwing down the gauntlet. The AGs are serious, and it's more important than ever that the companies comply.
Yeah. And I think one of the biggest things I know we'll talk about is the fact that so many states are handling things different. So at some point, it was a little simpler when there was just like the federal level of the rules, and then the states are all doing different things. And then just to put this in context, put a date stamp, you know, no mystery podcasts are recorded in advance, although sometimes it seems like it's not. Just so everyone knows, we are recording this on August 12th, 2021. So whenever you're listening to this, this is kind of the state of compliance, if you will, as of right now, based on what we're talking about. So my guess is by the time this comes out and people hear it, there's probably a lot more that's going to be in effect, right?
A lot more. And if they miss that virtual summit, I'm sure there will be a lot of people blogging about it. So yeah, for sure. Good idea to put a date stamp on this.
So one of the biggest things, and this is where I really want to start at a high level and then let you go where you think is best, is what I see, and I know you see this as well, where companies know about compliance. They know about like compliance and talking about all of these calling regulation side, right? On the telesales, teleservice. And they know those things exist. But there's this debate or battle in their mind of saying, well, if we're compliant, we're not going to be able to sell very well, or we're not going to generate the revenue we need to, or this and that, right? So it's an either or discussion that I see a lot play out in leaders and business owners' minds, which is, I can either sell a lot or be compliant, but I can't do both. I obviously believe different. I think you can do both. What do you see, and where is that intersection and or out of necessity?
Yeah, I will tell you that, you know, I have come across that attitude several times in my two-decade career. When you said that at the beginning, wow, I don't feel that old, but I guess I am. But I have seen that a lot. And what I've also seen is those that have chosen to just turn a blind eye on compliance, I frequently will see them in, you know, what we call the advance sheets that show cases that have been filed the day before, or showing up in press releases that an enforcement action was taken against them. So, and I can also tell you that I work with a number of very large companies, small companies, even entrepreneurial companies, and they are very successful at what they're doing and also complying. So it's not an either or proposition. And I would say in today's environment, it's probably more important than ever to comply, because as I said, you've got all these different agencies involved, but then you throw into that that we have the telecom carriers too, that have now become active regulators of what calls are going to get through to consumers, in the form of stir shaken, now, which we can talk about also today, but also in the form of blocking and labeling of telephone calls. So if you are placing telephone calls at a very high volume and you're having short duration telephone calls, or if you're getting a lot of complaints, either at the FTC's website or with the BBBs or with the telecom providers, then more likely than not, calls are going to be labeled or blocked. And so it's not even just that it's a compliance consideration. Now it really is a consideration of whether you're going to be able to effectively run your campaigns. You have to know compliance, and you have to integrate it into your operations.
So if I'm an organization and right now I'm operating, I feel like I'm compliant, I'm probably doing a good job of buying some opt-in leads, maybe Trusted Form, maybe with Jornaya, just there's something there that tells me it's hopefully compliant, or maybe it is. I'm just going to assume. I don't know if you can answer this, but I'm going to try. Mm-hmm. If I'm looking at this thing and saying, I can't change my whole ship, like my ship is going one direction. You're talking about a lot of things I should keep in mind. Is there anything that's at the top of that list, or is it literally like all of it should be addressed as soon as possible within an organization?
Well, I mean, it's not practical to think that everything can be addressed by an organization that hasn't implemented compliance into the design of their business operations. But I would tell you probably the most critical thing from the beginning is I think that consumer complaints are something that you have to take seriously. And you have to respond to, and you have to look for trends, because consumer complaints usually mean that those consumers are also complaining to the regulators or to the BBB, and the regulators monitor the BBB's complaints. and you have a much higher chance of getting involved in a federal investigation or a state investigation and potentially regulatory enforcement action if you don't pay attention to those consumer complaints. So that's always where I would start. Where are the complaints coming from? What are the folks that you're calling saying on the phone? Are you getting a lot of negative feedback on those types of things? And if so, those are your golden nuggets to look to see where changes need to be made. Beyond that, I always tell companies scripting is so important because you have the federal regulations that require certain disclosures, and then you have 50 states that also require disclosures. And if you do get involved in enforcement action, the first thing the regulators ask for are your scripts. And if they don't have the right disclosures in them, and it could be off as much as, you know, there are states that require a calling agent to say their first name and their last name, or to give a permission to continue statement on the call. And if you don't have those built into your scripts, then you have a violation for every call, and it's proof positive for those regulators or even any lawsuits that could be initiated. So, you know, critical to look at the scripting as well. And then third on that list, I would probably say, and it's really an AB component, is you have to have documented processes and procedures. It's required that you have certain documented policies and procedures in place, or it's a violation of federal regulations. You have to have an active do not call program in place. And then once you have those policies and procedures, then it's really critical that you train your employees. And so that's where I'd start. And then also you've got to audit to make sure that they're following those. But those are some steps you can take, you know, to begin with, so that it's not overwhelming. You know, there are a lot of compliance companies out there. That's something our firm does, working with companies to go in and do compliance audits and provide practical solutions that are capable of being implemented in a cost-effective way. So just critical that those things happen.
All right. So if somebody wants to start out and they really want to tackle this and take it bit by bit, then the first thing is to look at the complaints that you're probably receiving. And even the most compliant companies can end up with complaints. But if you're unsure of what's going on, is to take those complaints, like you said, look at them, address them, respond to them, don't ignore them. And then also look for the trends, which are going to be the same thing the government's going to look at, is what's the trend. If you have 10 complaints and they're 10 different complaints, well, that's 10 crazy people, right? 10 complaints and it's the same complaint and the same issue, then that's going to be a giant spotlight. So that's the first one you said. And then scripting for all those different states. I know there's technology that a lot of call centers can use to help that. I've even seen times where it's like, if somebody says no and they're from a certain state, you can't keep pushing. You can't keep trying to convince them and persuade them. Like, you have to take that and then end it, basically. And then, like you said, documented processes and procedures, and then obviously training everyone to make sure they know it and that you can defend that, like you said in the beginning, that defensible position, right?
That's right. Very well summarized.
Okay. So people are doing that. Then what would be next on the list? Like, as you're going through the call center hierarchy of needs and compliance, if we were to create such a thing, like, then what? Are we now getting into bigger compliance stuff and regulations?
I think after that, it's really just a matter of remaining current, right? If you've taken the time to put the policies and procedures in place, you've implemented them, you've trained folks on them, you're auditing against them, then you've got to just make sure you stay current. And so your podcast is an excellent place to do something like that. You're keeping people up on the law. So also, a lot of different organizations out there. I'm general counsel for PACE, the Professional Association for Customer Engagement. We have a very active government affairs committee. We get very involved in the important issues of the day, both in terms of filing briefs with the court, to educating congressional members. We have a legislative monitoring report that we put together every month to make sure that we know what's happening so that we can start to, you know, addressing those types of issues or educating, as the case may be. So you really just got to stay current because it's changing. Every day there's something different, either a new case that changes things slightly or a state that decides they're going to amend their telemarketing statutes, and those types of things affect you.
So let's start at a high level, I guess the top level with the federal government, things like TCPA. Where do you see companies struggling with that? And what kind of advice or direction should they be taking to, you know, especially in this current landscape?
Yeah, I think that there are some lead generators in the affiliate marketing space that have caused problems for companies. There's allegations of litigation of you know, manufactured leads or leads that aren't capable of being substantiated once you dig into them. So that's an area where we're seeing a lot of trouble with. Also managing vendors. So we have had a few cases that have come in that, you know, a company enters into a contract with a vendor for certain services and prohibits things like pre-recorded messages or using an ATDS in some situations. And then that company either disregards that or they subcontract the work and the subcontractor starts using pre-recorded messages or ATDSs when the calls weren't meant to be dialed that way and may not have the consent that was needed to dial that way. So, you know, vendor management and vendor due diligence and onboarding and, you know, keeping track of them, auditing them, you know, seeing if any complaints are generated by the numbers they're using, really critical to keep up on those types of things. So those are two of the areas that we're seeing problems in. Also, I would say, you know, you see cases out there where you rely on maybe a smaller lead generation company, and when a TCPA lawsuit is filed, that lead generation company folds up shop. And so you did not obtain copies of the leads, the information they used and received when generating those leads. And then you have no proof that you have consent. And that is required as an affirmative defense. So you have to prove that you had those valid consent forms in order to be able to defend the case.
Yeah. And I'm sure in that situation, using the reason slash excuse that you can't get a hold of them and they're not around anymore is probably not going to fly, right?
No, it doesn't fly for sure. That's not the plaintiff's issue. It's not a regulator's issue. It's your issue. It's your burden of proof and your defense to shed consent. So yeah, a big problem.
So I know one of the things that I see that comes up in conversations is I'm a call center. I'm buying leads, right? Or I'm paying for leads to be generated. Violation happens. And then it's like, well, it's not my fault because somebody else generated the lead. What is the current view on who's responsible for what in that chain of the compliance and where the burden falls, who's the most responsible or held responsible for it?
Yeah. And so ultimately under the TCPA, the caller is responsible. But having said that, there have been a few cases filed recently that I'm aware of that have also named the lead generation company. And really the frightening thing about recent litigation is that, you know, the TCPA has liability, not just for the call originator, but anybody really who was responsible for placing that telephone call. And so we are seeing owners of companies being brought in. We have seen a few cases filed that managers have been brought into the litigation. So, you know, that's an alarming trend that we're seeing in this type of litigation.
So then because it's on the caller and the responsibility for TCPA specifically, then is the lead generator generally just, except for the ones that you're talking about, recent one, are they just off the hook for it being generated the way it was?
Yeah. So some of the larger lead generation companies have been brought into litigation recently, and those are something that you can look up to see, but the lead generation companies are being brought into lawsuits now. And sometimes it's based on the fact, I will say, that the lead generator was the one placing the initial telephone call. So you know, maybe it was a transfer call that would happen. And so in those cases, it's a little bit easier to bring the lead generation companies in because they are the ones that are actually originating the call. But anybody in that chain can be liable. I would also say that frequently what we see happen with the lead generators is that they will have a contractual obligation to indemnify their clients. And so most frequently, the lead generators are not brought in. It's infrequent that happens. It's changing a little bit now, but it's infrequent. But what we do see is that the companies are then either post-litigation or post-settlement imposing those indemnification obligations on the lead generators. So that's more frequently where we see a risk for lead generators.
Hey, it's Jason here. We'll be right back to the podcast in a moment. But first, are you ready to help your inside sales team close more deals? In my experience, there's a certain percentage of your team that acts more like order takers than sales professionals. The first step to creating a scalable sales team is to equip your reps with the right mindset and proven strategies to transform them into quota breakers. To build a team of authentic persuaders that will crush their goals, email Jason at cutterconsultinggroup.com or go to www.cutterconsultinggroup.com. Okay, so one of the things you brought up earlier, you mentioned, and maybe this is a good place to put it in, is the Facebook ruling that happened recently and what that does to the state of calling, I guess.
Yeah. So, you know, we were pretty happy after the Facebook decision because, you know, that's something we had been fighting for a long time. I've been general counsel for Pace since 2011 now, I guess. And the TCPA really became a vehicle for litigation back in 2013 when the statute was revised to take away the existing business relationship exemption for calls to cell phones using an ATDS. And so back in 2012, when the FCC announced that they would do that, that was when we first got involved filing a brief asking for clarification on what the word capacity meant and the definition of ATDS. And the definition is a system that has the capacity to randomly or sequentially generate a telephone number or store or produce, I should say, telephone number, and then to call that telephone number. And so we were focused on that word capacity to randomly and sequentially generate that telephone number and then either call it or store it. So we got a decision back in 2015, which was the illustrious decision that made every type of modern dialing equipment technically an ATDS. We then appealed that to the DC Circuit Court. We got a favorable ruling in that and sent it back to the FCC, which has decided, the FCC has decided to focus on Surfshaken rather on defining ATDS. But at the same time, we had cases that were being decided by the courts, and one of those cases involved Facebook, and Facebook was texting in the case, not calling, but a text was viewed as a call in this realm. And so someone had gotten a number that had been assigned to somebody else. And when it was reassigned, he started getting telephone calls and texts and things of that nature. And he wanted those to stop. And so he put in a request not to. It was never honored. And so he sued Facebook. The important part of this is that when the U.S. Supreme Court looked at what the definition of an ATDS is, they were looking to determine those words store, produce, or store telephone numbers that have been generated by a random or sequential number generator. Was it really only modifying the produce, or was it also modifying the store and the term store? And so the plaintiffs that had been involved in litigation had said it doesn't make any sense for an ATDS to be able to store a telephone number. It's going to generate it. It's going to call it. So it must mean that if telephone numbers are being stored and then called, you know, being stored and called in a way that doesn't involve any type of human intervention, then that must be what the definition of ATDS was. Well, when the Supreme Court looked at it, we filed an amicus brief that attached a patent that showed that back at the time when the TCPA was written, there were actually dialing systems that would both store or produce telephone numbers. And so we showed in the patent that those could be stored. And so the Supreme Court relied somewhat significantly on that and decided that both of the words needed to be interpreted as something that a random or sequential number generator would do, store or produce. And so that was a very narrow definition, and it excluded all predictive dialers, except for there's this footnote 7 that you'll see people frequently referencing. And in footnote 7, the Supreme Court addressed plaintiff's argument that it didn't make any sense that numbers could both produce and store, and that, you know, as a result, that store term was superfluous, was the term that they used. But then they pointed to the patent again and showed how it wasn't, because we had shown a patent that did that. But in doing that, they mentioned that the patent also was sequencing numbers. And so footnote 7 has now been used by plaintiff's attorneys to say any dialing system that is randomly or sequentially using numbers to then sequence telephone numbers to be dialed, so they're then called from that list, is now an ETDS. And any type of modern computer that indexes telephone numbers is sequentially generating numbers for how those are subsequently, in our call center sense, going to be dialed. And so, you know, if you look at the actual decision, and I think quoting this is probably worthwhile, it says, in any event, even if the storing and producing function often merge, Congress may have employed a belt and suspenders approach in writing the statute. In other words, they were saying that both of those words were critically important, and it was in the dialing function. I feel like that was a long rambling, trying to fit in 10 years worth of TCPA. I don't know that I did a particularly great job on it right here that time around. But all of it to say is that Facebook was a very important decision. The TCPA has been narrowed. The problem is, we were hoping that after Facebook, cases could be dealt with at the motion to dismiss phase. You wouldn't have to do any litigation. You wouldn't have to do any discovery, because let's face it, the expensive part of TCPA litigation is the attorneys. And once you have to start litigating, once you have to start paying the attorneys, then you've already lost. So unfortunately, we've had a few courts that have taken footnote 7 to say that we have to do discovery to determine how the dialer is working. And it has mentioned this sequencing concept. So I would say one of the things that could be very helpful if you're one of the companies that's put in that position is there was a case out there, Huffness versus Do Not Pay. And because Pace felt so emphatic about getting on record about what the Supreme Court said, what our patent said, what our brief said, that we filed an amicus brief in that case. If you are in litigation and this is an issue for you, I'm happy to provide that brief to you that you could submit as an authority, supplemental authority potentially in your litigation, or you can go to the case and you can pull our brief. It's public. Again, that's Huffness versus Do Not Pay. I think it's very helpful for anybody that's running into that footnote 7 problem.
And I think that's all helpful. And yes, that's a long answer explanation, but I think the biggest thing that I learned from you and hearing about this several times is that this Facebook ruling really kind of pushed the government back a bit on their overreaching with the TCPA and everything they were trying to include, and helped narrow it down to the original intent, which, when did TCPA come out? How long ago was that?
Me too. In the early 1990s.
Yeah. So the technology then and what it was being used for and what's available now, I know if it's extended all the way, you know, a cell phone could be considered a ATDS, right?
Yeah. But I will tell you, that was the point of the appeal I mentioned to you from that 2015 FCC order. And the DC Circuit Court specifically said that if you are rendering every cell phone user a federal law violator, which I love that term, then your interpretation of the statute has gone too far. And so, you know, we use that frequently now. If it doesn't pass the everybody who has a cell phone would be a federal law violator when they make a call to somebody for marketing purposes, potentially, or even not. It could be a non-marketing call. If you're using your cell phone and you don't have the right kind of consent, then you're a federal law violator. So, yeah, that's the test. If that's what the case would be, then the definition has gone too far. And I think that potentially is the case with footnote 7 as well.
That's awesome. And again, for people who are in a situation right now, they'd rather not be in, but they feel like they didn't break that rule, definitely reach out to you to get that case and any info. So let's move on from the TCPA side. Let's talk about some state stuff. Now, obviously, 50 states, there's probably 80 different rules. I don't know, more rules than states. I just have a guess. But what are some of the big ones that are, you know, more universal across the states, or what companies need to be aware of? I know that, you know, what's referred to as the mini TCPA in Florida is a big one that just passed last month.
Yeah, you know, Florida is a problem because we have no context around the changes that were made by the Florida legislature and amending their telemarketing statute. And one of the problems with the Florida telemarketing statute is that it does have a private right of action, just like the TCPA. So it could become a very expensive thing if you are not understanding the Florida regulations and following those and building that defendable position that we've talked about. But the problem with Florida's amendments is that you need express written consent like the TCPA for these marketing calls. But it left some ambiguity about the definition of what type of dialing equipment triggers those express written consent requirements. And again, Florida has picked up on this concept of sequencing. So I don't know if this is something that happened in the wake of the Facebook decision, but they put that concept of sequencing. So what a lot of companies are doing now is they're getting dialer opinions on exactly what their dialing system can and cannot do. And a lot of companies are choosing to take the approach that if a phone number is automatically presented to an agent, even in a click to dial setting, that they're giving their agents the option to either click to dial that, or they could skip that number and go to the next one, or just choose not to call that, so that it isn't automatically sequencing the dialing of the phone call. So now would be a good time to have somebody take a look at your dialer and give you an opinion on that. And, you know, I always say when you're looking at your dialer and you need that kind of opinion, you've got to make sure your tech guys are on board with what it is that you're going to say, because we've had more TCP cases that I've seen be ruined by companies that brought their tech guy in as an expert who would say that they could make their dialing system do anything, because that's what technology can do. And that caused problems, especially before the Facebook case. So.
You know, like you said, there's scripting in 50 different states. There could be challenges all over. But where is there just an extension of, say, TCPA or FCC stuff?
Sure. Well, I'll talk about some places where we've seen state causes of action that are causing companies problems. California has a privacy regulation that requires consent to record for any calls that are being monitored or recorded. And there's a $5,000 penalty. Statutory penalty associated with every call that is recorded that there's not that type of consent to record disclosure on. So that is a huge problem. You've got to make sure you're getting those consent to record requirements right. We're also seeing a number of cases that are being brought in South Carolina. They have a statute that has stacking of penalties for violations of things like not having the proper disclosures that we were talking about before. So the name disclosures, not following the do not call laws, not calling with consent for certain type of dialing. So we're seeing a stacking of penalties in South Carolina that can rack up very quickly. I saw a case that was filed this week that I thought was actually, it was probably last week, that was really interesting. And that now that we've got the ambiguity with the TCPA cases and plaintiff's attorneys are concerned that they're going to have to be involved with all of this very expensive discovery only to lose at the end. We're seeing them bring in these state law violations as well. And also they're bringing in plaintiffs from each of those states. And a couple of reasons for that. One is that some courts were finding that if you had a plaintiff, say in Ohio, bringing a TCPA case, you could only bring in class members from Ohio. So plaintiff's attorneys are countering that by bringing in plaintiffs from multiple states and making them part of the representative plaintiffs in class action. So since being in the AG's office, one of the things that we've done in private practice more than anything else is 50 state surveys. And that's because there are these 50 state statutes for telemarketing, for consumer protection, for privacy, for consent to record, and all of these different areas. And if you're calling in all 50 states, you have to be on top of them. And you've got to understand what your least common denominator is and decide that you're going to meet that least common denominator or that you're going to decide not to call into that state. So, you know, all of this to say about the state laws, the types of requirements that I just mentioned, you really you've got to know where you are potentially setting yourself up for some pretty significant outcomes in the future, especially with the plaintiff's bar as active as it has become.
So like I had mentioned in the beginning, this conversation, which I knew it was going to be like this, is not necessarily a happy, fun conversation. We're not talking about closing more deals and motivating your team and all these other things that I could talk about. But obviously, it's super important because it's the survival and long-term success of a company is going to be based on navigating all this. If you were running a call center, what would keep you up at night relative to either what we've talked about or anything else? Like, what is it that you would be most worried about?
An unmotivated team. me up at night.
Not anymore. That would be the least of the concerns.
An unmotivated team. Yeah, so they definitely need you, Jason. If you don't have a motivated team, none of this matters. So
that's true. If they're so unmotivated, they're not closing any deals or calling anybody, then that doesn't matter.
That's right. Okay, so next to that, there are so many things that can keep you up at night. But, what I would say is you just have to have a good compliance partner. I say that it's my job to make sure that my clients can rest easy. And it's for exactly this reason, because we've already considered what all of the potential outcomes are. We know, where the hot spots are. We know how to take care of those in a way that doesn't kill sales. It's just, it's really important. You should not lose sleep. You should be proactive in making sure you're checking all the boxes and in a way that still makes, business doable. The concern that, actually, it's not a concern, it's a huge irritant for me, is that, I'll hear regulators say that, the people that are making the money are all of the bad guys. And I look at them and say, no, it's not. The ones that are the ones that are doing it right, because you're not coming into contact with them is the reason you don't know they all exist, but they most certainly exist and they most certainly are making it work. And consumers still do like to have phone calls, but they want to expect those phone calls, and then they want good service and they want persuasion, when they're on the telephone. And it has to happen that way. It just has to.
Got it. And yeah, I couldn't agree with that more. Now, one of the things I know that you bring up a bunch when you're talking about this is that there's two kind of situations that happen, especially with you as an attorney, is there's the people who are proactive and want to build that compliance and not lose sleep. And not that they're going to let you lose the sleep, but let you do what you do in helping them, again, with that defensible position. It's not that can't avoid any challenges, but just being able to defend it when it does come, because complaints will always happen. And then there's the other group, which is, oops, now I need your help. What is it like you want to say, or what is it that keeps those people who are just waiting for it to come from like getting it set up the right way up front?
I think they fall into a couple of different categories. The primary of which would be they didn't know what they didn't know. And so that's the Rumsfeld unknown as it's been called. We see a large category of those folks. Or the other kind that we see frequently is the ones that built it in as maybe a cost of doing business that something like this would happen. And I think once they realize what the actual cost was to that, potentially, when you're looking at potentially $1,500 per call, that very quickly gets larger than what my calculator can calculate. Then I would say that that's a bad calculation to make. So we see those types as well.
Got it. Makes sense. I mean, obviously, and what you wish, if you could wave a magic wand, was for everyone to approach you first and build that compliance and keep in mind everything that's possible and do it in the way that the government wants over time. Just get that set up, build a defensible position. So hopefully people listening to this, it's not about scaring everybody or worrying everybody. It's about, okay, just start putting those things in place. And I can say, again, working with enough organizations, it seems overwhelming and daunting. And we talked about it early on. It's just start knocking those compliance dominoes down bit by bit, just getting to where you need to be. For people who listening to this are still tuned in, haven't freaked out and deleted the episode and moved on to something more fun and exciting, people who want to get in touch with you, I know that there's the main website for your law firm is mslawgroup.com. There's also a really good blog on there with lots of constant updates. I know that you're on LinkedIn, Michelle Schuster. And then I know, because I learned this, in your name for people who want to spell it, it's 1L, no C in your two names. And then also paceassociation.org, which is what you mentioned earlier for customer engagement, the professional association. Any other good places where people can go, resources, any other places where you're at, where they can get a hold of you?
Speaking a lot in the next couple of months, I'll be at the PACE ACX. I think it's September 18th and 19th, if I have that right. And then I'll be at SOCAP the second week of October, and then LeedsCon the third week of October. So it starts to get busy. That is if COVID doesn't shut everything down, which keeping my fingers crossed.
Yeah, it looks like it might. I know a couple of things have moved or changed, but hopefully everything will keep on going and people will be safe and things can return. So Michelle, thank you for coming on here. I really enjoy this. I think this is such an important thing for companies to be focused on so that they can do that and sell all at the same time. So thank you for coming on here and sharing all this and giving people so much value. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. It's been my pleasure.
Did you get some inspirations of ways to help your call center sales team win bigger, stronger, and faster? Hope you are fired up to scale your sales operations. If you got value from this podcast, please go in and leave a rating and review. Also, make sure to forward this episode to anyone else you know in the call center space. We appreciate your support in growing the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast family. And if you have any comments, ideas, or feedback, contact us at CutterConsultingGroup.com.